Chapter 30. He had had no nightly rest to speak of since that day when, in the grounds of the Chateau Borel, the sister of Victor Alden had appeared before him. The perplexities and the complex terrors, I may say, of this sleeplessness are recorded in the document I was to see later, the document which is the main source of this narrative. At the moment he looked to me convincingly tired, gone slack all over, like a man who has passed through some sort of crisis. "I have had a lot of urgent writing to do," he added. I rose from my chair at once, and he followed my example, without haste, a little heavily. "I must apologize for detaining you so long," I said. "Why apologize? One can't very well go to bed before night. And you did not detain me. I could have left you at any time. I had not stayed with him to be offended." "I am glad you have been sufficiently interested," I said calmly. "Oh, merit of mine, though the commonest sort of regard for the mother of your friend was enough. As to Miss Alden herself, she at one time was disposed to think that her brother had been betrayed to the police in some way." To my great surprise, Mr. Razumov sat down again suddenly. I stared at him, and I must say that he returned my stare without winking for quite a considerable time. "In some way," he mumbled, as if he had not understood, or could not believe his ears. "Some unforeseen event, a sheer accident might have done that," I went on. "Are, as she characteristically put it to me, the folly or weakness of some unhappy fellow revolutionist." "Folly or weakness," he repeated bitterly. "She is a very generous creature," I observed after a time. The man admired by Victor Alden fixed his eyes on the ground. I turned away and moved off, apparently unnoticed by him. I nourished no resentment of the moody brusqueness with which he had treated me. The sentiment I was carrying away from that conversation was that of hopelessness. Before I had got fairly clear of the raft of chairs and tables, he had rejoined me. "Yes. I heard him at my elbow again. But what do you think? I did not look round even. I think that you people are under a curse." He made no sound. It was only on the pavement outside the gate that I heard him again. "I should like to walk with you a little. After all, I preferred this enigmatical young man to his celebrated compatriot, the great Peter Ivanovich. But I saw no reason for being particularly gracious. I am going now to the railway station, by the shortest way from here, to meet a friend from England," I said, for all answer to his unexpected proposal. I hoped that something informing could come of it. As we stood on the curbstone waiting for a tram car to pass, he remarked gloomily, "I like what you said just now." "Do you?" We stepped off the pavement together. "The great problem," he went on, "is to understand thoroughly the nature of the curse. That's not very difficult, I think." "I think so too," he agreed with me, and his readiness, strangely enough, did not make him less enigmatical in the least. "A curse is an evil spell," I tried him again. "And the important, the great problem, is to find the means to break it."
"Yes.
To find the means." That was also an assent, but he seemed to be thinking of something else. We had crossed diagonally the open space before the theater, and began to descend a broad, sparely frequented street in the direction of one of the smaller bridges. He kept on by my side without speaking for a long time. "You are not thinking of leaving Geneva soon?" I asked. He was silent for so long that I began to think I had been indiscreet and should get no answer at all. Yet on looking at him, I almost believed that my question had caused him something in the nature of positive anguish. I detected it mainly in the clasping of his hands, in which he put a great force stealthily. Once, however, he had overcome that sort of agonizing hesitation sufficiently to tell me that he had no such intention. He became rather communicative, at least relatively to the former offhand curtness of his speeches. The tone, too, was more amiable. He informed me that he intended to study, and also to write. He he went even so far as to tell me he had been to Stuttgart. Stuttgart, I was aware, was one of the revolutionary centers. The directing committee of one of the Russian parties, I can't tell now which, was located in that town. It was there that he got into touch with the active work of the revolutionists outside Russia. I have never been abroad before, he explained, in a rather inanimate voice now. Then, after a slight hesitation, altogether different from the agonizing irresolution my first simple question whether he meant to stay in Geneva had aroused, he made me an unexpected confidence. The fact is, I have received a sort of mission from them. Which will keep you here in Geneva. Yes. Here. In this odious. Dot, I was satisfied with my faculty for putting two and two together when I drew the inference that the mission had something to do with the person of the great Peter Ivanovich. But I kept that surmise to myself naturally, and Mr. Razumov said nothing more for some considerable time. It was only when we were nearly on the bridge we had been making for that he opened his lips again. Abruptly, could I see that precious article anywhere? I had to think for a moment before I saw what he was referring to. It has been reproduced in parts by the press here. There are files to be seen in various places. My copy of the English newspaper I have left with Miss Alden, I remember, on the day after it reached me. I was sufficiently worried by seeing it lying on a table by the side of the poor mother's chair for weeks. Then it disappeared. It was a relief, I assure you. He had stopped short. I trust, I continued, that you will find time to see these ladies fairly often, that you will make time. He stared at me so queerly that I hardly know how to define his aspect. I could not understand it in this connection at all. What ailed him? I asked myself. What strange thought had come into his head? What vision of all the horrors that can be seen in his hopeless country had come suddenly to haunt his brain? If it were anything connected with the fate of Victor Alden, then I hoped earnestly he would keep it to himself forever. I was, to speak plainly, so shocked that I tried to conceal my impression by heaven, forgive me a smile and the assumption of a light manner. Surely, I exclaimed, that needn't cost you a great effort. He turned away from me, and leaned over the parapet of the bridge. For a moment I waited, looking at his back. And yet, I assure you, I was not anxious just then to look at his face again. He did not move at all. He did not mean to move. I walked on slowly on my way towards the station, and at the end of the bridge I glanced over my shoulder. No, he had not moved. He hung well over the parapet, as if captivated by the smooth rush of the blue water under the arch. The current there is swift, extremely swift. It makes some people dizzy. I myself can never look at it for any length of time without experiencing a dread of being suddenly snatched away by its destructive force. Some brains cannot resist the suggestion of irresistible power and of headlong motion. It apparently had a charm for Mr. Razumov. I left him hanging far over the parapet of the bridge. The way he had behaved to me could not be put down to mere boorishness. There was something else under his scorn and impatience. Perhaps, I thought, with sudden approach to hidden truth, it was the same thing which had kept him over a week, nearly 10 days indeed, from coming near Miss Alden. But what it was I could not tell. Part 3rd. The water under the bridge, ran violent and deep. Its slightly undulating rush seemed capable of scouring out a channel for itself through solid granite while you looked. But had it flowed through Razumov's breast, it could not have washed away the accumulated bitterness the wrecking of his life had deposited there. What is the meaning of all this, he thought, staring downwards at the headlong flow so smooth and clean that only the passage of a faint air bubble, or a thin vanishing streak of foam like a white hair, disclosed its vertiginous rapidity, its terrible force. High as that meddlesome old Englishman blundered against me? And what is this silly tale of a crazy old woman? He was trying to think brutally on purpose, but he avoided any mental reference to the young girl. Crazy old woman, he repeated to himself. It is a fatality. Or ought I to despise all this as absurd? But no, I am wrong. I can't afford to despise anything. An absurdity may be the starting point of the most dangerous complications. How is one to guard against it? It puts to rout one's intelligence. The more intelligent one is, the less one suspects an absurdity. A wave of wrath choked his thoughts for a moment. It even made his body leaning over the parapet quiver. Then he resumed his silent thinking, like a secret dialogue with himself. And even in that privacy, his thought had some reservations of which he was vaguely conscious. After all, this is not absurd. It is insignificant. It is absolutely insignificant, absolutely. The craze of an old woman, the fussy officiousness of a blundering elderly Englishman. What devil put him in the way? Haven't I treated him cavalierly enough? Haven't I just? That's the way to treat these meddlesome persons. Is it possible that he still stands behind my back, waiting? Razumov felt a faint chill run down his spine. It was not fear. He was certain that it was not fear for himself, but it was, all the same, a sort of apprehension, as if for another, for someone he knew without being able to put a name on the personality. But the recollection that the officious Englishman had a train to meet tranquilized him for a time. It was too stupid to suppose that he should be wasting his time in waiting. It was unnecessary to look round and make sure. But what did the man mean by his extraordinary rigmarole about the newspaper and that crazy old woman, he thought suddenly. It was a damnable presumption, anyhow, something that... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.